time for another edition of One-on-One with Ducky. Here's your host, Sean Hugis.
Greetings, Grinders. It's Sean Hugis, a.k.a. Ducky Succumbs. We're back again for another episode of One-on-One with Ducky. This is episode 8. I think last week I said it was episode 6. I think I conveniently forgot I interviewed Enac at some point. That's how I'm going with this. So no professionalism, but I think that's what you expect of me. So it's okay. But considering now we have a professional on the air, somebody that a host of a Sirius XM radio for Fantasy Insiders, we have Dan Strafford on the line right now. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm good, Sean. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, that was completely just me just riffing right there. There was no planned intro right there. That was I tend to go off on tangents, so just let me ride. But the show started late tonight, and it gave me an idea for a topic because you have two kids right now, and it's a topic we never go over often. You want to give a shout out to your kids right now?
Sure. Nora and Maeve, 6 and 3 years old. They have helped me set lineups in the past, so they'll be happy to know I'm talking more daily fantasy here. So that's always good.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. How do they do, by the way, in terms of setting up lineups? Are they good, or have they hit a couple for you? Or
my oldest is currently in elementary school and goes to Fitzgerald Elementary. So during football season, there was a lot of Larry Fitzgerald in the lineup.
Okay. Well, that's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, it could have been like, Kitna High School or something. Something like that. Yeah, I don't know. Just random name I could come up with. But, who's the quarterback for the Rams? Or Keenum. You could have gone to Case Keenum Elementary. That would have been tough to try to line up for. But most of the games, especially with baseball I know is your main thing, start around the time usually when the kids are probably the most active. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I would say that 7 o'clock lineup lock here on the East Coast is rough for any sport. I mean, baseball, basketball, football, obviously you have Sunday, so it's a little easier to plan for, but it's dinner time, it's bath time, it's pajama time. It is difficult to say the least.
Okay. And yeah, so there's always the rush to sneak in the lineups, and you tend to probably miss the scratches more often than the average player, I would assume.
I work from home now, which has been actually a big help for DFS, but when I was commuting in New York City and doing dinner and bedtime, I mean, from the commute home from 5:15 to 6 and then 6 to 7 dinner, I there was no reason to play NBA. There was no reason because I was constantly missing out on news. I would try to play one or two lineups, but I ended up playing late slates more than anything when it came to NBA when doing that. It's tough, but it's fun. I mean, there's a different element to it. There is a definite degree of difficulty juggling two kids in bathwater with laptop not too far away while trying to set a lineup and also make sure they don't drown.
Yeah, and electrocution too. You got to avoid that. That would be horrifying, so, to say the least. So, but overall, so and most of all, I mean, you have a lot of jobs. So we're going to go through a few of them right off the bat. But
sure.
But because of that, you have a lot of jobs. You're raising two kids, and you're also doing DFS for a living. How do you juggle it all, I guess, is the question of how can one have it all?
I drop some things from time to time, hopefully not my children, but more often than not, I work full time. I work for an education company full time. That takes up obviously 40 to 50 hours a week. I do Fantasy Insiders show Monday through Friday, midnight to 2. So that takes up 3 hours every night. And then I have a couple other jobs that we can get into later. And then there's the fatherhood stuff. It's just trying to be present when I'm doing whatever I'm doing. You know, like it's the idea if I'm focusing on my day job, I need to focus on my day job and make sure that I'm putting in 100% effort there. I used to believe in multitasking. You know, I used to think that was a thing. It's just doing a lot of things poorly at the same time. It's not doing anything well. So I try to make sure that I focus down. And DFS is the one that usually is the laggard, you know, is the one that stays behind because I know I can always come back to it. There's always a late slate or an early slate the next day. I know that If I happen to miss one slate, yeah, I can convince myself I would have had the nuts, but I probably wouldn't have, let's be honest. I just move on, but it's juggling. It's figuring a lot of it's in the same space at least. So I do a lot of video and audio production at my daytime job. And with Fantasy Insiders and my other couple of jobs, it's all sort of doing the same thing. So I'm not trying to wear like a waiter hat, a bartender hat, a video production hat, and then radio hat, you know, that would be insane. Sure. It's all sort of in the same mold other than being a dad.
Yeah. Well, let's go through some of these jobs. So, because I could come up with questions for each of these, some of these hit topics I'm always interested to talk about, but let's start with the first one. So you work for an education company where you're working on testing. I assume it's SAT, ACT, things right. like that, correct?
Right. So I work for Kaplan okay. Test Prep. I mean, no harm, no foul there.
Okay, good. I never know. Are the tests easier now, or have they become harder over the years? I've heard rumors that they've softened the tests and things like that, but do you think that they've actually done that?
It's weird. We just went through the SAT change. The SAT just changed again, and the ACT is changing as well. So it's all relative to what you're being taught. And you know, with Common Core and all these different education things going on, sure. It's hard to judge one student against the next. From everything we've heard about the SAT, it is more difficult now because it's more reading based. So it's more like even the math problems are more about reading comprehension. So in that light, it is harder for someone who may not be at a reading level they should be. They're now having to read every question. So that's a big deal. From what I understand about the SAT and ACT, they are about as hard as they've ever been. They try to keep them as standard as possible. When you talk about like the LSAT and the MCAT and those grad school admission tests, what's interesting is technology. Yeah. You know how much technology is playing into how they have to test these people, because the LSAT, the lawyer pre-law test, is still paper and pencil. You think about it, and my brother's a lawyer, and we know many lawyers in the field of daily fantasy, obviously. I don't think any of them look at books. They Google everything. You know, they look things up online. So
it's the basic thing. I mean, from when I was a kid, you had to go to the library, the whole thing. I'm not going to do the walk 12 miles of snow angle here, but... But you had to go to the library, do everything. Now everything's right there for you. I don't know how a kid has to do research anymore because it's right there.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, talking about my daughters. My daughter's in kindergarten. They were doing animal research on Chromebooks in her kindergarten. Like, they brought Chromebooks into the classroom, and that's how they were doing their research on butterflies. Whereas we would have had to go to the library and take out a book and photocopy the book and hope that you did it right. And it's just a different world. And it's interesting to keep an eye on.
I mean, I remember how musty libraries were when I was a kid. I can only imagine how musty they are now. Nobody's in them. So it's just kind of interesting. But how about, I don't want to call out kids because that's your bread and butter there, but let's try to do this as delicately as possible. Are the kids tougher nowadays in terms of entitlement and things like that, or are the kids still just agreeable? And
you mean from the education standpoint? I think the whole millennial BS is BS. I mean, it's the same as the baby boomers yelling at the hippies. It's the same. Like, it's every generation thinks that the kids have it too easy because they're making it easier for them. I think the funniest thing that we see today is, oh, millennials don't know what it's like to work hard. Yeah, because they haven't had to. Like, and fine, whose fault is that? Their parents, because their parents went out of their way to make life easier for them. And that's great. I think there are plenty of students who want to coast. I wanted to coast. I didn't do anything in high school. Like, I preferred BSing my way through life. But I think you have plenty of kids who are looking to get educated. And I think what's interesting, Sean, right now is that all of these like boot camp things you can do, like you can take a 12-week course in data science or a 12-week course in programming. I wouldn't have never done that stuff, but you have these kids doing it while they're in college. They have to like get 3 or 4 degrees to really be competitive now. And I think that's something that gets overlooked. I mean, it's fun to make fun of millennials because I know plenty of them. But I don't think they're any more entitled. It's just the nature of how we keep moving forward.
Oh no, trust me. I'm a hypocrite because I make fun of millennials and I was the biggest coaster in the history.
If you can do it, do it.
Yeah. I was not one of those people that was, I think my peak of energy for school was in eighth grade. And then after that, I was like, I could get a B here. Okay. B's fine.
Once I realized I could be average and still move forward, I was like, oh, cool. I can be average and pay attention to sports more. And I can do more after school stuff. I can work more often and get B's on tests. Okay, great. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Well, that brings you, when did you start playing fantasy sports? Was it in
junior year of high school? Was the first year I did a full season long baseball league. So like full in-depth points head-to-head league. That was 1998 was my first year playing fantasy baseball. I dabbled in basketball and football. I was never a huge fantasy football fan until probably 10 years ago. I stayed more with baseball. It's just my passion. I tried basketball. I tried hockey. Hockey, I was terrible at. It was baseball first and always.
Yeah, I'm going to age myself. I always do this. I started in 1985.
Nice.
So junior high school. So in 1985. But yeah. But 16 league, though. So it wasn't that hard. But we were playing for like $2 at that point, I think. But the effort I put into that was more than any of my geometry homework or anything like that. I was doing the stats by hand. Yeah. It's worked for me now. I mean, it helped me, but at the time I couldn't have imagined it actually helping me in any way. But
so you were rostering guys like Gary Templeton for fun and.
Yeah, I won my first league and it was, I think my top players were Harold Baines and Dave Winfield, if I recall. So there you go. And I think I wrote to Harold Baines and told him he won my fantasy league for me. I don't think he cared. I don't think Harold cared about that. He wasn't much for that, I'm sure. So, but yeah, that was, I had the original first rotisserie league book. I don't know if I still have it, but it might be buried. But yeah, long time. Yeah. It's amazing how you get into these things when you're a kid and, you never think of it at the time. I mean, did you think this was something you could turn into a career at the time you said, or wished that you could turn into a career?
No, it was, well, not specifically. In high school, I wanted to do broadcasting. I wanted to do play-by-play was my goal. I wanted to do baseball and basketball play-by-play professionally. So when I went to college, I did. I went to Rutgers in New Jersey and I did 4 years of football, baseball, basketball, play-by-play. So I got to travel all over the country calling games, but it's a difficult world to live in. You know, you have to move to Buke or to Des Moines or somewhere Midwest and work for 5 years and hope you get the call that somebody wants to move up. And I didn't. I stayed in New Jersey. I started working for a local AM station, doing news, sports here and there. And it just wasn't anywhere for me to break in. And I slowly started to talk more and more about fantasy sports. I started a podcast with my buddy Joe, and that sort of just kept growing and kept becoming something that people enjoyed for one reason or another. And it slowly became more and more a realization that it might work. It might be something I could do part-time, if not hopefully sometime full-time.
And now you're doing it full-time, see? So it's worked out for you. When you were at Rutgers, were there any big time athletes playing at that time that you were?
Sure. Not really. When I went to Rutgers, Greg Schiano had just shown up for the football team and they were 0-11 my sophomore year. There was Brian Leonard was there. So he played in the NFL for a little while, not much. Ray Rice was there. 2 years after I left, he was on the 2006, 2007 teams. In basketball, not really. It was more, the women's team was much better than the men's team in basketball. In baseball, the Frazier brothers. So Jeff Frazier is Todd Frazier's older brother. I called games. He was in. Bobby Brownlee was a really good pitcher who ended up wrecking his elbow in the minor leagues. He was the 26th overall pick in the first round and just ended up disappearing. His fastball went from 94 to 83 in 2 years. And he disappeared.
Got an instant Jared Weaver, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So, wow. You also do something. It's funny. Last week I had Drew Dinkmeyer on, and unfortunately I did not know this, that Drew never listens to music. And I wish I had known
really?
That. Yeah. It's just one of those things I found out after the fact. Unfortunately, I wish I would have railed him for 5 minutes.
I love Drew, but that's a sad, sad life.
I know. I was like, how do you not listen to music? I said, I'm ready to give you a crash course. So you work for a site, though, that specifically deals with meanings and song lyrics.
Yes. Correct? Okay. So going back to high school, a buddy of mine who I went to high school with started a website back in 2002, maybe, maybe even earlier than that, to be honest, based off of a discussion he had with a friend about Ben Folds 5 Brick. So everyone has heard that song. It's depressing as all hell. And you have the discussion about what's it about. And it turns out it's about his girlfriend and whatever else. You all can go look it up on songmeanings.com. Basically, he decided to make this site to discuss song meanings. And not necessarily like, here's what the artist said it was about, but here's what I think it means. Here's what it means to me. And it grew into one of the bigger lyric sites for a while. And so it's Song Meanings, and he's run it for a while. I helped him out with same stuff, digital media, videos, social media, stuff like that.
What band or singer gets the most vigorous debate regarding meaning lyrics?
It's interesting. So you have two camps, much like you do in Daily Fantasy. You have people who love to debate on a certain level, and then you have the trolls who just love to be trolls. You have a lot of people who love to hate on Coldplay, love to be in there ripping apart Coldplay on the charts. I mean, the Beatles still get a ton of, even in this generation, still get a ton of interpretations on there. Coldplay is one. Prince has seen obviously a large uptick over the past couple of weeks, passing away. You get a lot of interpretations. It's mainly what you see more than anything. It's mainly rock interpretations, you know, sort of alternative rock, hard rock from the 70s, 80s, 90s, where the most debate happens. You don't see a lot of hip hop debate on song meanings. You don't see a lot of pop debate on song meanings. But you see a lot of. Well,
what does baby, baby, baby mean? Yeah, you kind of figure it out.
I mean, Soundgarden's another one. Soundgarden, like Black Hole Sun, and those sort of songs resonate a lot with people. And the Beach Boys is always funny with like Good Vibrations and those sort of things. People love to twist them as many different ways as possible.
It's funny. I when I was a teenager, my bands were like REM, mm-hmm. Who there wasn't really a purpose in decipher. Well, you had to decipher their lyrics because you couldn't understand them
right
half the time. The first three albums, it was mumbling. For the most part. So you never really went into the, well, what does this mean? Because you didn't know what he said. So it was more important to figure out what it meant, than what it meant, I should say. And then there the other bands I like were like New Order, who just weren't, they weren't strong lyricists. So it didn't really matter.
Well, that's the funniest thing about the site in general. And I was just away this weekend at a Soul Meanings retreat. We're out in the middle of the woods of Pennsylvania, trying to figure out our next steps with the site. But it's always funny because in the end, people try to get all song lyrics into what I feel like is three categories. It's either sex, drugs, or God. Like that's where eventually people push all lyrics. And for the most part, you can figure out most songs fit into those three categories. So it's always funny when people though try to pigeonhole a song that's clearly about having sex, about being about God, and you have people react like, no, that's wrong. Please don't do that ever again. And you get a lot of misheard lyrics, much like you were saying about REM. Everybody knows, excuse me while I kiss this dude, you know, and those sort of misheard lyrics over time. So you get some fun interpretations there of people who just never knew. One of my favorite stories though is my sister-in-law for the longest time thought the Alanis Morissette song, the cross-eyed bear for you, she thought was in fact a cross-eyed bear, like a teddy bear. And that revelation when she had it sitting at the dining room table was one of the funniest things I've ever witnessed. So all good things.
Well, yeah, no, one of my favorite bands is Yola Tango, which mm-hmm. is New Jersey. So only about a month ago did I realize they had a lyric that I in this song called Deeper Into Movies that originally I thought they were saying Barbarino in the sky.
Barbarino?
Yeah, like Vinnie Barbarino. And it was instead of point a finger to the sky, I think is what they're saying. I can't remember, but it's something along those lines. But the whole time I'd always hear it, and I'd just be Barbarino in disguise. I couldn't remember what it was. I thought that because it was a movie thing, I thought they were making fun of John Travolta for some reason in the song. But yes, it's very easy to misinterpret lyrics.
And once you hear it the first time, like once you hear it and you believe that to be true, you hear it every time. Like you hear that like mistaken lyric. There was a Weezer's Buddy Holly. I completely misunderstood the lyrics for a long time. I heard Seward's Folly, and I was a history major at the time. So I was like, oh, yeah, of course, Seward, who bought Alaska. Of course they're talking about that. Why would you think that? Like, why in my right mind did I equate that to what the lyrics were about? But for a good year until my brother pointed it out, that's what I thought it was.
I just heard Seward's Folly. Okay, I could see it, actually. That makes sense. I can't argue with that. It's wrong, but I understand. So now you're doing the show. So you do a midnight to 2 a.m. show on SiriusXM. Do you get mostly people that are looking to complain about the night before, or you get people that are really trying to take advantage of the next day already?
It's a mixed bag. So Fantasy Insiders, you know, is a daily fantasy site. But what Sirius has asked us to do is do a season-long show as well. So we do get some trade offers, some, you know, people looking to for advice on the waiver wire. But more often than not, it is looking to the next day. People want to already start to you know, especially when we have early slates, if it's a Thursday or if it's our Friday night show and Saturday is staring us in the face, it's already people looking to turn the page and at least get a jump. Now, obviously, much like doing a podcast that comes out like Dan's does or whoever, you know, whoever comes out early in the morning, you try your best to give a foundation to people. You say, hey, weather's a problem, especially with the NBA. You're like, I have no idea if Boogie's going to sit or not. I hope he doesn't. So hopefully he plays. But you try your best to give a foundation. We do get some decent tilting calls where people have rostered someone who got rocked for one reason or another. And it's fun to get the difference where it's the guy who's angry and ready to curse on air and the guy who's just completely depressed and sounds like Eeyore, you know, where you have to sort of build him back up for the next day. So it's part psychologist at times trying to get people through to the next day and next slate.
It's funny. The one time I called into one of the shows was Dan's show, or it might've been Dean was co-hosting it, but it was the night of the water main.
Sure. Yep.
I was that in Vegas for the water main. My brother made it into the FanDuel championship, said, all right, Penguins scored 3-0. Sorry. It happens. But, and I was basically there to give the update on how everybody was handling the water main situation. And yeah, you haven't lived to see a tilt until you've seen that day. It was the whole gamut of punching holes through walls and sitting quietly like a serial killer and the whole thing like that. Everybody, luckily I didn't have a team in it, because if that happened to me, I probably would have immediately gone to the roulette table and lost about $5,000 or something.
I'd be the guy quietly laughing in the corner that you'd have to worry about. Like that, like the moment of almost breaking would be right there. I'd find it funny for a second and then potentially.
Yeah. You find it silly and inane, and then for a second you come back to the reality of, oh yeah, I was playing for $1 million. Now it's already over and I don't get a chance. Yeah. But I do feel for tilters. I do. I tilt as much as anyone. But between you and your co-host, who would you say is the one that's the more sympathetic of the two?
I'm more sympathetic than Dave. Dave is awesome. Dave Locker and I've never met. So Dave and I have worked together for almost 2 years now. And we've never met in person, but we've done podcasts and radio shows together for almost 2 years now. He is Philly tough. He enjoys being that guy and that fella, as he enjoys saying all the time. I am a bit more, I would say, softer than he is when it comes to how we handle tilters. He's a good ear. He can bend his ear from time to time, but he'll give you it straight when it comes to how he really feels.
Well, that's the combo you need, though. Mm-hmm. You need a bad cop to make any of these shows work, I think, to some degree at least. So, I guess the last thing, I never really make this a DFS show, but let's have a tiny ending on DFS. I mean, especially because we're in this, well, we're not in a DFS league. The reason we met each other was because I was brought into your season long league, which is not going well for me right now.
Me either, don't worry. Me either.
Yeah, damn Kyle Schwarber. Oh, well. But for DFS, what would be the one main bit of advice you'd give to somebody new coming into a DFS?
The thing I tell everyone is I'm still new. The way I look at it, I've been playing for 3.5 years, but I don't play full time. I don't play large volume. I'm a micro stakes sort of player, and I admit that up front. I don't try to, you know, pretend I'm anything different. The thing I tell anyone who is trying to start to play is the biggest piece of advice I ever got was from Steve Finkelstein, who's Tilt for Steve on Twitter. I'm sure you've seen him tilting before, which was via David Kitchen, Soccer Dave, was bankroll management is the place to start and the place to end your day. And it's not to say like scrutinize a spreadsheet every 2 seconds, but just understand how much you're willing to lose, because that's what matters most. Because in any given day you could lose. You don't want to focus on that, but you need to understand its possibility. So if you have $100, you're playing 20% of that every day. Of that 20%, you're playing a certain amount in cash games, a certain amount in GPPs. When I thought about it that way and really thought about it in the long haul, not about hitting the lottery day over day, thought about it as a career more, about the opportunity to make some extra money and really set myself apart, a light bulb went on. Before that, I'd been playing on draft day and had put in $10 and would play $10. I'd lose $10 and then I would go back and do it again. When I started managing my bankroll that much better, it made a world of difference. And the thing for me, this isn't really advice, it should be fun. I know not everyone looks at it that way, but fantasy sports are supposed to be fun. They're supposed to be something that you do for fun. And there are guys out there who do it professionally and do it at high levels. And they may not be having as much fun as I do, because I understand what they can lose and what they can win. But I think if we all sort of understand, hey, let's have fun. Let's enjoy it. Let's try to keep it going. Try to turn Idaho and New York around and get them back on the map. We'll have fun playing it. So it's fun. It's bankroll management. And then it's never selecting Billy Hamilton. And my life will be good.
Yeah, Billy Hamilton, that's a tough one. Yeah, to all the people listening, my advice on that too is, yeah, 99.9% of the people playing are not going to become professionals, and you right. have to accept that fact right from the beginning. I mean, honestly, I'm micro stakes as well, so the two of us are perfect examples of it. You can still have a say in the conversation and have fun with it, but make sure if you're one of those God-given few that get to be the elite players, that's great. But for the most part, just be realistic of what's going to come out of it, because it doesn't happen to most people. I mean, yes, there's the occasional person in like the DraftKings million that right. puts in 3 and hits, but that's 1 in 350,000, and just because you play 350,000 times doesn't mean you're going to win.
Right, so, exactly. It
doesn't work. So just be realistic. But I thank you, Dan, for coming on.
Thanks for being patient. The kids finally.
No. Look, I don't have kids. My brother has kids, and he. But I just from seeing the exhaustion on my brother's face, I know. I know.
So so we went food shopping earlier. And so we went food shopping at 6:15. It should have taken us 45 minutes. It took us an hour and a half, because every single item we passed was, Daddy, can we get this? Can we get this? No, let's talk about that later. Daddy, can we? No. And like then you start to get angry, and then you get angry at yourself for getting angry at these two beautiful children you helped create. And then you want to end their lives for a short, brief time. Yeah. And then you get even angrier because you're spending more money because you're not paying attention anymore. You're like just grabbing things like, I need to get the hell out of here and go home. So that was my night before coming home, getting them to sleep, and talking to you. But this has been great fun, and I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no, it's great. No, I I've been noticing more and more when I go out to eat, I'll watch like a parent with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing that look of that thousand-yard stare they have on their face right at that point while the kids are still going 100 miles an hour and they're just dreaming of an island for a moment or something like that. And
somewhere far
and
away.
There are benefits. I know there are. I love kids. But at the same time, I feel their pain at the same time. So, yeah, you were fine for being late. I'm okay. I got to watch the Penguins play for a period. So if it was 3-0 Capitals right now, it might be a different story, but I'm in good spirits, so don't worry.
Very good.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dan. Just follow me. He's on fantasyinsiders.com. He's also on SiriusXM hosting, well, on the East Coast, midnight to 2 a.m. on the West Coast, 9 to 11, a reasonable hour. Maybe I used to have Sirius. I want to get it back. Maybe I'll have to get it back just so I could call in and heckle or something.
Nice.
Like that.
Yes, please.
I'm a stockholder with Sirius. So I bought the stock at 8 cents when it was at 8 cents. So I was, I've held on to it. Got it before Howard. So it
nice.
Worked out. But so maybe it's time for me to get back on the Sirius train and join in. So, but look out for him on both the website and the satellite radio. And thank you all. Next week is Peter Jennings.
I'm sandwiched between Pete and Dink. Excellent. That's fantastic.
I know. You should be proud.
I am.
You live in the state. I think Pete's still recovering from Achilles surgery, if I recall correctly. So maybe he'll be heavily on Vicodin or something like that.
One can hope.
Yeah, dare to dream. So, all right. Thank you, Grinders, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.